Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, our Scouting Combine edition with reports from Indianapolis.
Wayne, we've got the Combine covered, as well as way we hear it around the league. How do the Saints escape salary cap hell, and any chance that the Houston Texans can keep Mario Williams in town?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee, and we welcome you to a Scouting Combine weekend edition of Pro Football Weekly. The way we hear it features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of PFW. And joining us live from the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, we begin with executive editor Dan Arkush. Dan, the Green Bay Packers came up with a two-year deal for tight end JerMichael Finley, taking the talented tight end off the market before it hits.
Yeah, Wayne, there was some question as to whether or not they were going to franchise him. All points kind of were leaning in that direction, but there was a big question about whether he would be designated, if they did franchise him, as a wide receiver or a tight end, and we were talking about a $4 million difference there. And basically what the agent for Finley ended up doing is splitting the difference. They agreed to a two-year, $14 million deal. He'll be getting about $3.75 million in bonuses before next season, and he's going to be only, 25, 26 years old when this deal is over with, and will still have another opportunity to make a big payday. So they agreed to a compromise. They really needed to get him back, as you well know. So now it's interesting, though, because it opens up the possibility of franchising other Packer players, like possibly Scott Wells, the center, or the quarterback, Matt Flynn, who, would be a setup for a trade by franchising him.
And you know how the other thing of this, that this deal does, the two-year deal, and I think it's fairly ingenious, and the agent did bring it up initially, and the Packers worked the numbers and made it work, is two things. It gives the team an opportunity to see if this particular player is the next Jimmy Graham at tight end. Secondly, it gives the player an opportunity to get back into free agency at 26 years old, and if he is the next Jimmy Graham, then the payday will be really big.
Well, and I will tell you guys this, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, because you should play by the rules you're given, but if the Packers, in fact, franchise Matt Flynn for the purposes of trading him, that's going to raise a stink amongst the Players Association and agents and free agents everywhere. And, hey, again, if that's the way the system works, I say go for it. So, Wayne, I want to ask Dan, I'm going off the script here, but before we get to one of your other teams, the Cardinals, Dan, I understand one of the first guys that you heard from in Indianapolis when you arrived at the Combine was Trent Baalke, and I'm curious what, if anything, he had to say about the future of Alex Smith and all the room they have under the cap to hopefully go out and fix the wide receiver position.
Well, Hub, that was obviously a hot point, and he went out of his way to say that they have all the confidence in the world in Alex Smith, made every indication that a deal is going to get done there. As far as the overall approach they're taking, though, in free agency, they want to be very patient like they were last year, and you saw how well it worked for them. By being patient, they still managed to get people like Carlos Rogers, Dante Whitner, Jonathan Goodwin, had a tremendous free agent cast. So they're going to use the same method, and they're definitely going to bring back Alex Smith based on what he said.
Well, you know, the Cardinals last year made a big move and got a quarterback, Kevin Cobb, and now we're told there's interest in Peyton Manning by the Arizona franchise. What can you tell us there?
If he's good to go, obviously it would be a huge upgrade from the situation that they had last year, Wayne. I mean, they brought in Kevin Cobb, but just didn't work out. He had injury problems. He had a tough time assimilating an offense that's not real easy to grasp. And I think there could be a real interest in Peyton if he's good to go. We've seen what the Cardinals can do with a veteran quarterback, like with Kurt Warner. And, of course, Larry Fitzgerald, I don't think Peyton would mind too much having him as his number one receiver. There were rumors that they met for dinner here in Indy a couple of weeks ago, and nobody totally denied that. So it's a rumor with some legs. We'll just have to kind of see how things pan out. It'll be real interesting. The Colts contingent, the new guys on the block, will be talking later, so we'll get more on Peyton for sure.
And Dan, a real quick follow-up. What would happen to Cobb? Would they just flat out release him? Is there any trade value whatsoever for him?
I think they would probably just let him go, eat the amount of money that they've invested in him already. He's got a bonus due, I think, about 7 to 10 days after the decision with Peyton. So, yeah, I don't think that they could keep both of them. And if they went with Peyton, they'd make John Skelton the backup.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it, Dan. We're joined now by Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane. Patriots offseason decisions. They've got a lot of them to make. This is a Super Bowl team. Left tackle Matt Leidt, I guess, starts it. Will he return or retire?
Yeah, that's going to be a big question for them to answer. And I think the Patriots appear to be ready for him to retire. I think, you know, Nate Solder played very well at right tackle. He's been groomed to be the left tackle of the future, and Sebastian Vollmer will be healthy next year starting over at right tackle. And we, you know, we hear the Patriots decided Marcus Cannon, who was a rookie last year, and everybody thought he was going to be the next in line at guard, he's going to be a tackle moving forward. So they already have three right there. You know, Matt Leidt had a tremendous season, and you guys saw how well he played in the Super Bowl. So there's still a chance he'd come back, but the Patriots are ready to move on if he decides to retire.
Hey, Kevin, very quickly, the Patriots with a bit of a quarterback controversy?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting, the number two quarterback, and if we learned anything from this season, that backup quarterback's so important, and I think the Patriots are going to give a first-round tender to Brian Hoyer. They really value him. It's kind of almost like a little kept secret in New England, and the word is that Ryan Mallett, while he impressed during his first year, obviously didn't play at all, I think he's not ready to be the number two yet. So they want to keep Hoyer, they want to keep Mallett, and just keep moving with those three quarterbacks.
All right, Kevin, hang with us, so we'll get your notes on the Dolphins coming up. The Scouting Combine edition of Pro Football Weekly continues after these messages. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. We continue with Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane, who sat in with Miami Dolphins GM Jeff Ireland and Head Coach Joe Philbin at the Scouting Combine. Now, let's take a look at this, Kevin. They've got quarterback issues to sort through, and where are they on that front?
Well, they've made it very clear that they're going to go get someone, whether that's Matt Flynn, Peyton Manning, Robert Griffin, you know, Ryan Tannehill, somebody in the draft. Some quarterbacks didn't come in. The reports are Chad Henne will not be brought back, which is to no one's surprise. And Jeff Ireland, when asked about Matt Moore, he said Matt Moore's on our roster, which is far from a vote of confidence. And I think a lot of people made a connection, obviously, between Philbin and Matt Flynn. And I asked both Philbin and Ireland about the difficulties of evaluating the quarterback when he hasn't had a lot of chances to start. And they said, you just watch tape. And nobody knows Flynn better than Philbin does. So, you know, they made it very clear today, like they have all offseason, they're going to go get a quarterback. There's really no secret about it.
Kevin, is the gut feeling that they would rather go through the draft or, you know, perhaps tickle the owner's fancy and go after a Peyton Manning type? And there's always Matt Flynn. I mean, we know about the ties to Green Bay with Joe Philbin, the new head coach. I mean, in your gut feeling, what would you say is the most likely avenue they would go?
You know, it's funny because we can sit here and make these guesses, but the fact is Joe Philbin probably already knows whether or not they're going to go after Matt Flynn, because he knows him so well. And, you know, that might have been the first thing he told Jeff Ireland, Stephen Ross, is whether or not Flynn is the real deal. And it'll be a red flag to the rest of the league, which people have talked about this week, if the Dolphins don't go after Flynn. But I think with Peyton Manning, if he's available, if he's healthy, I still think he's the first option for Miami to get the guy that can come in and sell tickets and to make the move. And if that doesn't work, and if Philbin's not sold on Matt Flynn, then we have another situation because Mike Sherman knows Ryan Tannehill very well. And Sherman might be very high on Tannehill. We can see the Dolphins decide to go after him or aggressively trade after Griffin. So it's really hard to kind of go to the gut because these guys do have personal connections to some of the quarterbacks available.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Appreciate your work on that story. Associate Editor Dan Parr joins us. He's also in Indianapolis. And, Dan, the New Orleans Saints, my goodness, they've got a free agency nightmare going on right now, led by their quarterback, their best player, Drew Brees.
Absolutely, Wayne. It's a tough situation that general manager Mickey Loomis is facing right now, but one that he knew it was coming. And, you know, the Saints have had an opportunity now with Drew Brees, known as the face of that franchise, the heart and soul of the team, to get something done. They knew this day was coming, but they didn't. You're seeing now that, you know, even though he is so valuable, one of the most valuable players in the league, so valuable to that franchise, this contract is not getting done easily. It's not happening quickly. Tom Condon is Drew Brees' agent. He's the same agent who negotiated Peyton Manning's 5-year, $90 million deal last offseason. So he's been through this rodeo, and Drew Brees is looking at the same kind of numbers, the deal that Peyton Manning signed, and, you know, he feels his one chance, because you look back at his deal he signed to join the Saints, it was a 6-year, $60 million deal. Not chump change by any means, but not a deal that made him one of the highest paid players in the league. This is a deal that could do that, and it's going to be his only chance to do so, probably. But he has something to deal with now, with structuring his deal in a way that makes him one of the highest paid players in the game, but he also would like to structure it in a way that allows him to give more flexibility to keep guys like Carl Nix, one of the best guards in the league, going to be a free agent. Also, Marcus Colson, his number one wide receiver, who's due to become a free agent.
Well, Dan, you know, it would seem to me the bottom line on this one is if they are forced to franchise Drew Brees, and quarterback has to be the most expensive position to franchise a player at, it almost says no way they can re-sign both Carl Nix and Marcus Colston, who I think are the two next priorities for them. And to go a step further, with Jarry Evans already the highest paid offensive guard in football, can they sign Carl Nix whether or not they franchise Drew Brees?
Well, they can, but that is a big question. Do you do that? Jarry Evans was, when the Saints signed extension, it was, I think, something like 6 years and $57 million. Are you going to commit that kind of resources with two huge deals for guards? I mean, these are important players, two of the best in the league at their position, but that's going to be pretty prohibitive when you try to do other things. So I think ideally for them, they work out a deal with Brees. I don't expect the contract to get done much before the buzzer on March 5th, the last day to use the tag. Ideally, they do that and are able to use the tag on Carl Nix. So you have those two guys in the fold. Carl Nix probably not going to be too happy with the franchise tag, but you know, he'll not have much choice at that point. And then Marcus Colson, if you kind of connect the dots and see how this could play out, seems most likely to hit the open market. That does not rule him out from being back with the Saints. We'll have to see how that Brees deal is structured and just where everything lines up cap-wise by the time they get to that point. There's still going to be some guys, I think, who could have their deals restructured. Mickey Loomis, a lot of people have a whole lot of confidence in his ability to manage money and put this team in a situation with salary cap to get some good things done.
We're talking with Associate Editor Dan Parr from Indianapolis of the Scouting Combine. Chicago Bears front, there's a lot of talk in Chicago now that they are going to get a deal done with Matt Forte. What do you see there?
Well, Lovie Smith spoke at the Combine, and what you heard from him is that the approach the Bears have taken to Matt Forte hasn't changed, and that they've made it, you know, very clear how they feel about him, want him in the fold. He thinks it's probably only a matter of time before a deal gets done. Talking to other people who are closely involved in the situation, you haven't really heard anything that leads you to believe there's been a breakthrough. You know, even though Jerry Angelo is out and Phil Emery is in, there was a change of general manager, and things obviously never really got going to where the Forte camp wanted to with Jerry Angelo. Franchise tag, at least to start, to prevent him from hitting the open market, which they have no intent of letting him get there. Seems, I think, if I had to look at it today, that's where I see things going on March 5th, at least by that date. Could they work out something after that? And they'll have till mid-July to do that, to work out a long-term agreement before the deadline to do that with players your franchise. So I still think there's a chance it happens before then, but I have a hard time seeing it happening in the next couple weeks.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. More Way We Hear It on this Scouting Combine edition of Pro Football Weekly when we continue. Welcome back to this NFL Scouting Combine edition of Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. Eric Edholm is in the studio with us as well. Associate Editor Eli Cabron joins us. And Eli, one of your teams, the Denver Broncos, backup quarterback Brady Quinn made headlines for all the wrong reasons this week in a GQ article. Tell us about it.
Yeah, in a story by Michael Silver about the evolution of Tim Tebow's season, Brady Quinn was quoted as saying we had a lot of luck, I guess, to put it simply, talking about Tebow's success. And then he said that he thinks that he would have probably been the starter when Kyle Orton was replaced, except that the fan support for Tebow was overwhelming and that he never was really given a fair opportunity. And we hear that that's going to maybe cost him on the free agent market. I don't think he was set to return to the Broncos anyways. He never played under on a Broncos uniform, but it can't hurt his free agent standing when he kind of bashes a teammate like this.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, Eli, and I guess I'm just not a GQ kind of guy, so I haven't read the article, and it's a good magazine. I'm not taking on GQ, but my point would be I don't see anything derogatory about that, and as a matter of fact, I think it's pretty accurate and pretty honest, and I guess what it really just goes to show you is don't try and touch Timmy Tebow.
Well, there was a lot of players that were kind of quoted saying the same things. Terrell Suggs is quoted in the article as kind of saying that what Tebow did was pretty much luck, but the fact that Quinn was also in the Bronco uniform and that he was his teammate, and he kind of said that if he were the leader, he would have done things a little bit differently than Tim Tebow, it just kind of rubbed people the wrong way that this was a guy that was supposed to be supporting Tebow on the same team, and he kind of is bashing him now that the year is done.
You know, but this to me is a great example of what's so frustrating in today's social media world. Did Brady Quinn say that Tebow was pretty much luck, or just that we had a lot of luck? Because we had a lot of luck is not debatable.
Yep.
Now, if he's suggesting that the Tebow was strictly luck, then I get it.
Well, yeah, the quote was, "We've had a lot of, I guess, luck," to put it simply. Kind of saying that he didn't, I mean, yeah, you kind of go the both ways. You look at the Bears game, the Marion Barber play, that is completely luck, and Tim Tebow wasn't even on the field for that. But they did have a lot of fourth quarter comeback wins, and you got to give Tebow some of the credit, but it seems that Brady Quinn is kind of saying that something else was involved, and he kind of wishes that he were the one on the field when that happened.
To me, this is like the greatest moment for Brady Quinn since Notre Dame. I think he's absolutely right on here. I can't see anything wrong with this quote, and I just don't get it myself.
Well, here's the other thing about this whole deal. Now, another part of this article, he was asked about Tim Tebow praying and that type of thing. And Brady Quinn, this is what kind of stuck with people. It shows you the kind of where we are as a society. But the quote where he said, well, you know, he did a lot. He alleged that Tebow did a lot of grandstanding with his praying, you know, away from the other teams. You know, why doesn't he pray with his teammates? You know, then he wouldn't have as much a problem with this display of prayer after big plays that Tebow was making.
Yeah, Quinn said that he would do it in the locker room privately with his teammates instead of in the front with the cameras. But there was other people quoted in the article that said that they didn't have a problem with what Tebow was doing, and that it's a common occurrence among all NFL players to take the field when they take the field before a game to pray. So it kind of both sides of the argument were there, but it does kind of show just how our society has changed, that we're arguing about where a person should pray before a football game by a backup quarterback. It's kind of weird.
Well, and guys, it also shows how unfortunate this whole story continues to be, that we're debating their praying and their style of praying as opposed to their delivery and their ability to hit receivers down
Amen.
The field, you know?
Amen.
T-Bowing.
Hey, let's go on to another one of your, how about a football topic, Eli? The Kansas City Chiefs, 3-year contract, the Chiefs signed with ex-Raider Stanford Rout at cornerback, likely means that Brandon Carr is going to hit in the free agency market. And I got to tell you something, there's a lot of interest in Brandon Carr.
Yeah, the Chiefs wanted to bring back Carr, but Carr wanted a contract similar to what they gave Brandon Flowers, which was 6 years, $50 million, and that's just too much to lock up to two corners, especially after they paid big money last year to rookie safety Eric Berry. Then they just gave a big deal to Rout. So GM Scott Pioli said they want to bring Carr back, but that's not going to happen. He's going to go somewhere else where he can get paid more. The thing is, though, the Chiefs still need corners. They've taken corners in the draft each of the last 4 years, and they still have almost no depth behind now Flowers and Rout. So defensive back is an issue that Pioli's going to address.
Eli, I'm going to ask you to hand the mic off to Associate Editor Arthur Arkish. And, Arthur, we're a little short on time, but I got to find out what's going on in Houston, because I think Mario Williams is one of the three or four best defensive players in football. I understand that the Texans have got a lot of young talent on defense. They've got salary cap issues. They can't really franchise Williams, and apparently Williams is not in the mood to offer any home team discounts?
No, I don't think so. I mean, really the situation right now is that Rick Smith and the cap guru Chris Olsen are working diligently behind the scenes right now to try and, you know, put their best offer on the table for Mario Williams before he would hit the free agent market on March 13th. He's going to have to be blown away by the Texans' offer, but I think that Williams and his agent Ben Dogra, they realize that the Texans are a bit hamstrung right now, and that there's other teams who are going to be able to offer more. So I still expect them to hit the open market and probably leave.
Thank you very much, Arthur. Mario Williams will be a big player in free agency if he hits the open market. Stay tuned. More Pro Football Weekly coming up after these messages. This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Senior editor Eric Edholm is with us in the studio as well, and we welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening. And Mike, in Detroit, a lot of noise from defensive end Cliff Averill, who had an outstanding year last year. He's made it known that while he's a free agent, he does not want to be tagged by this team and taken off the market.
Right. Like any other free agent in his position, he wants a multi-year deal. That's more money. The team certainly, I think, would prefer a multi-year deal for the reasons of salary cap purposes, but whether or not both sides can come to an agreement remains to be seen. And the Lions do have the tag to use. He would be the free agent that that would make the most sense from a value standpoint to use, because he's their best free agent that's available out there, one of the top pass rushers. So we shall see how this goes, but we're talking about a guy in Averill that has improved every year, 11 sacks last year, and there's a premium on that position in free agency.
You know, Mike, it's fascinating to me, and I guess most people just don't care since they got a 10-year deal and we don't have to worry about a lockout or a work stoppage again for 9 more years. But amongst the things that the players got crushed on, that they allowed the owners to continue to franchise players up to 3 times is absurd. And I realize that for the masses, you know, you figure, well, it's only the best player on each team. It doesn't affect that many people. But you can fully understand Averill's concern, because here's a kid who's earned a $30, $40 million deal. He'll get franchised. He'll get, you know, $17, $18 million this year. But if he gets hurt, that's it. And I understand why some of these guys get so upset by this tag.
Right. I mean, I completely understand as well. I mean, free agency should, you know, in the player's mind, I think, be free agency. But again, this is something that has been a tool that ownership has used for years and years. It's been something that's been collectively bargained. And again, the argument is, again, it's a very high guaranteed salary given to players. But you're right. Certain guys like pass rushers, like Cliff Averill, are going to make a lot of money in a multi-year deal. I mean, look at the deal that Charles Johnson got last year, for example. There's a lot of money to be made if you can rush the passer, and he's a guy that clearly can.
Senior editor Mike Wilkening with us. Pittsburgh Steelers, unusual case of wide receiver Mike Wallace. He's on all the free agent list, but he's somewhat restricted, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a restricted free agent, and, you know, at the least, the Steelers would figure to give him the highest tender, which would be a first-round pick in compensation if a team made an offer to Mike Wallace and the Steelers didn't match. They also have the franchise tag, either the exclusive or non-exclusive tag, at their disposal. Now, the franchise tag, the non-exclusive one, comes with the compensation of 2 first-round picks. So it's clear that Pittsburgh does have some options here. They do have the, you know, ability to match any offer. So this isn't a situation where Wallace can be signed easily, but he is the rare restricted free agent that you can make the argument that might be worth a number one pick, because he's improved throughout his career. He's got wonderful speed. He's a Pro Bowl receiver. And, you know, look, I mean, Pittsburgh has some salary cap issues. So you mix all those things together, and maybe you have the elements for some restricted free agency drama. But it's a good point, guys. This is not a situation where he can walk out the door and sign with somebody else without any sort of other discussion as of March 13th.
Mike, thank you very much. I want to get to Eric Edholm, who is with us in studio, our senior editor, as we're talking about all these contracts. Eric, you look at the situation in New York, where OCU Manyora has been out front. He's thrilled about his second ring, but he's still really unhappy about that contract he signed 7 years ago that has kept him from getting paid at the level that his performance should dictate.
Yeah, I mean, he played very well last year. He was hurt, but he averaged a sack a game, was a key figure in their resurgence down the stretch all the way to a Super Bowl title. And, you know, it's funny. Some people, even though they're talking trade and the possibility of him either being released or cut or traded to somebody else, I think they need him. I mean, you've got Jason Pierre-Paul sure to get double teams for the next 5 years of his career. You've got Justin Tuck battling injuries all season long. That shoulder was problematic, even though he played a terrific Super Bowl. And really, after that, you've got no one else. Dave Tollison's just a dude. I mean, he's a very good dude to have at the back of your roster, but I think you'd rather have OCU in yours. So if they're going to trade him, that probably means they spend a high draft pick on a defensive end. So they want to get something for him if they're going to do it. OC's been a good soldier. So, you know, with all the problems in the past, he said, I'm going to stay quiet, but staying quiet means talking to several media agencies and making sure that he gets the word out that, you know, he'd still like his situation that he hasn't gotten the last 4 or 5 years.
Eric, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about your Dallas Cowboys team on your list of teams to cover. Are they targeting Brandon Carr, the free agent cornerback of the Kansas City Chiefs, now that it appears the Chiefs are going to let him hit the open market?
Yeah, we talked about how good Carr is, how young and how talented he is, and everyone talks about Carl Nix, a big offensive guard they could go after, ties to Bill Callahan, the new offensive line coach, and they may still be interested, but I think it's going to be Brandon Carr. I think they're going to cut Terrence Newman, the cornerback. I think they're going to possibly make another move there at corner, even draft one of the first-round pick. But Carr might be the guy that they set their sights on in free agency and make a big splash for.
You know, Wayne, it's funny. Every time Eric talks about one of these dudes, all I can think of is the Coen brothers and Jeff Bridges and John Goodman. And John Goodman might have made a hell of a defensive tackle. You never know.
Nothing wrong with being a dude, except the way Eric was using it there. Pro Football Weekly continues after these messages. Welcome back to this off-season edition of Pro Football Weekly, along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and senior editor, Eric Edholm, and the Pro Football Weekly staff of editors. This is Wayne Larrabee. Guys, free agency, we're just starting to get into it. Well, let's just do a real quick preview here in these next two segments of some of the strongest positions, first off, in free agency as you look ahead. And obviously things will change as we go along. Teams will tag players and they'll come off the market, that type of thing. But where is the real strength of this free agency class, guys?
You know, Wayne, I don't think there's any question that it starts with wide receiver, as we just talked about in the way we hear it. A lot of people talking about Mike Wallace. He's the best available because of his age and his speed, but I don't see him moving. But then you look at guys who short of franchise tags could move. You've got Vincent Jackson of the Chargers once again, DeSean Jackson of the Philadelphia Eagles, Dwayne Bowe of the Kansas City Chiefs, Stevie Johnson of the Bills is on the list. You got to look at Wes Welker in New England and Marcus Colston, New Orleans Saints. You know, and the list goes on and on. You got Laurent Robinson who had his breakthrough year with the Cowboys, Mariel Manningham, the big Super Bowl. Eric, every one of these guys are unrestricted.
And you know what's really interesting, Hub and Wayne, when you look at the big picture too, it's a very deep wide receiver class in the draft, and we'll have plenty of time to break those guys down, but I think guys like Laurent Robinson, Mariel Manningham, who had their breakout season, Manningham more in the postseason than the regular season, but I think they're going to get left out in the cold here because the top guys will go somewhere. We know that. They'll either be re-signed or sign big deals somewhere else. But I think because of the depth of the draft, these guys may be forced to take 1 or 2 year deals back with the clubs they were on last season.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting to see how that's going to shape up. As you mentioned, the draft is very deep as well at wide receiver. Cornerbacks are always a priority. Guys, are there some cornerbacks? Now, we've mentioned Brandon Carr of the Chiefs on a couple of occasions here. Are there some other cornerbacks to really take a hard look at that could come in and help a defense? And are these cornerbacks somewhat restricted as to what kind of defense you play?
Well, you know, it's such a hard position and such a priority position, Wayne, that I guess you'd say this isn't an exceptionally deep group at the top, but you do have Courtland Finnegan, who brings both talent and attitude to a defense. We know that. He's unrestricted with the Titans after 6 years, although we think he will probably re-sign there. Brett Grimes in Atlanta, if he could stay healthy, might be able to, you know, cash a big payday here. Unfortunately, there have been issues about his health. You mentioned Brandon Carr. Carlos Rogers took a short deal in San Francisco last year and had his first Pro Bowl season, but he is 31 years old. And, you know, Eric, then you start to get a little sketchier, but you got guys who may be ready for breakthrough years. We know the Baltimore Ravens absolutely want to bring Ladarius Webb back. He's going to be available if somebody wants to take a flyer. And although I should say restricted, again, the restriction is such a key because I don't think you're going to give up a first-round pick for a guy like Ladarius Webb. And then you got Aaron Ross of the Giants who stepped in pretty good. Remember Terrell Thomas, their best cornerback, yep, went down. People don't even remember their best cornerback was out all year. So I'm not sure what happens to Aaron Ross in New York. He could be moving.
Fascinating to me that the Giants have already spoken to Terrell Thomas, who suffered an ACL in the preseason. Haven't talked to Ross's people yet. So that's a good idea that he might be one of those guys that moves. Tracy Porter, we talked to her earlier about the Saints' troubles at that position. All the people they have to re-sign, they're pretty much giving up on him, I think. Patrick Robinson probably moves into the starting lineup. That means Tracy Porter, the Super Bowl hero, the postseason hero from a couple years ago, could fit in an off-man style. I think that would work. And I think Finnegan, I know the Lions still have to re-sign Cliff Avril, but even though he didn't have his best season last year, I think Finnegan will be a great fit up in Detroit. They need playmakers at that position. He's a feisty son of a gun. I think he would fit a Jim Schwartz defense pretty well.
How about quarterbacks, guys? What do you see there now? I know Matt Flynn, certainly Green Bay, has a lot of interest already being expressed in him. He's going to be a free agent, or you would expect he might be. There's still a possibility that Packers could work a tag with him and then trade him somewhere. But that again, is, you know, that remains to be seen. But what do you see at this position, and can you get a starter, a bona fide starter at this position?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Wayne, because obviously we're waiting on Peyton Manning. And I think everybody believes that Manning will not play with the Indianapolis Colts. He will drive this whole market, and we've exhausted the conversation about the teams who will line up for him. Alex Smith is going to find a way to stay in San Francisco. They're going to make that marriage work. The next thing closest to a starter is Kyle Orton, who's going to be on the move again. The Chiefs say they like Matt Cassel more than Orton. They're not going to make an effort to re-sign him. I've had some folks tell me that Orton has reached out to some former teammates in Chicago and that because of family considerations, he would consider accepting a backup role to a Jay Cutler. But I don't know that that's true. He's also sending out, word that he'd like to be a starter. We've talked about Matt Flynn. He will be the number two priority, Eric, after, of course, Peyton Manning. And then you got a Vince Young. What do you do with a Vince Young at this point?
Yeah, I mean, he might be able to win in the short term or give you a spark off the bench. I mean, he had a couple of moments last year, but was also awful at times. You know, Chad Henne is not going to be back in Miami. He's somebody who I still feel like, you know, if he was developed properly, he could have a chance. Jason Campbell started in Washington. He started in Oakland. You know, I've always felt like he's been sold short a little bit. These aren't upper echelon guys. Orton, I think, might be the best after those top guys we mentioned.
All right. Thanks very much, guys. We'll be back to talk more free agency in the NFL when we return on Pro Football Weekly. We continue with this off-season edition of Pro Football Weekly. We're talking free agency, a little bit of a primer here. We'll go into depth on free agency in the next few weeks here on this program. But along with Hub Arkush and Eric Edholm, our senior editor, Hub Arkush, the publisher of Pro Football Weekly, I'm Wayne Larrabee. Guys, let's talk about the top of the free agent list. I mean, some of these guys, you know, are not going to hit the open market, but some of these guys will, and they have the potential to make impacts on their new teams. You know, Drew Brees, I can't picture him leaving New Orleans, guys, but he's number one on that list. Mario Williams, the outside linebacker defensive end of Houston, had a great season going until he suffered a season injury about midseason. This is a guy who has an impact ability. Talk a little bit about these players.
Well, you know, Wayne, and again, we add Peyton Manning along with Drew Brees at the top of the list, and what's so fascinating there is that I don't see any circumstances under which Manning stays in Indianapolis. I don't see Brees getting out of New Orleans. I think the Saints may have to franchise him, and so what's intriguing there relative to free agency is what it does to the Saints' other very high-profile free agents in offensive guard Carl Nix and Marcus Colston. All three of those guys are not going to be Saints, and so I would look for Colston to move, and that's going to be a bonanza for some team that gets him because he's a great locker room guy, a great performer on and off the field. Mario Williams, I think Eric and I share some thoughts about what's going to happen there because, again, the Texans, they want him. They want him badly. They don't have the salary cap room. They've got Arian Foster, who's right behind him on the list, maybe restricted, but they still got to get a deal done there, and they got all that young talent on defense.
Yeah, because of the way they calculate the franchise, it's not the way they used to do it. Basically, it's a complex formula using past numbers in the franchise number. It would cost them $22 million to franchise them. That would put them over the cap right there, and you haven't dealt with Foster yet. So I think, you know, despite their last-ish best efforts, they're gonna have to let this guy hit the market. You're talking about a 26-year-old defensive player who can terrorize, heat up the edge, defensive end. He can stand up, look great in five games under Wade Phillips, and both 3-4 teams and 4-3 teams are going to be salivating for this guy. So, you know, someone's going to end up with an exceptional football player in the prime of his career.
Well, and Wayne, I thought Eric was going to go there. I don't want to force him there. I believe it's the New England Patriots.
Because I think so. Yep.
If you look back 2 years ago, the one other team that kicked the tires on Julius Peppers besides the Chicago Bears was the New England Patriots. Nobody is more masterful at creating cap room, at rebuilding his roster. And Mario Williams is 3 years younger than Julius Peppers was when the Bears guaranteed him $43 million. So you might say, hey, stay in Houston, take the franchise money. $22 million is great. Yes, it is. Defensive end is one of the top positions for franchise tags after quarterback. But if you can get guaranteed twice that much or more, that's what Mario Williams is going to command on the open market.
And he's better than Rosie Colvin, whom they signed. I mean, they've always set an eye for these pass rushers, these special once-in-a-generation type guys.
How about DeSean Jackson? Does he get out of Philadelphia, guys?
Eric, it's your team. I'm just not that high on DeSean Jackson. I wouldn't pay him the franchise money, but I guess what we're hearing is the Eagles are thinking about it.
Yeah, they're going to franchise him, Wayne. At least that's the indication we've seen so far. They've talked him up, which to me suggests that they're going to trade him. They're building up his value. And, you know, we talked about the deep wide receiver market. I don't know what you get in return for this guy. I mean, yes, he's a field tilter. Yes, he's somebody who dictates a different kind of deep coverage than most players out there, rare speed. But is he still a punt returner? Is he still an impact guy? Doesn't catch a lot in the red zone. He's not a big TD producer. He is somebody who can catch a 60-yard bomb at the drop of a hat, but I'm not sure he's that impact receiver a la Vincent Jackson.
And Wayne, I don't want to call him a wussy, but he's been known to pout and not show up.
History of concussions, too. You know, I mean, there's a lot of red flags with him, even though he is so dynamic.
My goodness, you guys sound like an ad for one of these herbal medicines or something, you know? This works,
snake
but boy,
oil.
You got all these, you know, all these things that could happen if it doesn't. Let me ask you about one offensive lineman here in the top 10. That's Carl Nix. The Saints had two Pro Bowl offensive guards. Can they afford to keep two?
Well, the other one, Jerry Evans, they made the highest paid offensive guard in football 2 years ago. And so the answer is no. And this is something that fans don't often understand. You cannot commit a disproportionate percentage of your salary cap to one or two positions because it tilts your ball club. And this is a team that desperately needs to get better on defense. They're going to pay a fortune for Drew Brees. So there's really no way. The ideal scenario here is if they can sign Drew Brees, then they use the franchise tag on Nix, who won't like it. But there are a few positions where it's less expensive to franchise a player than offensive guard.
Yeah, and it's apples to oranges here, but you know, look what the Eagles did last year. They had Asante Samuel making $9 million. They go out and sign Nnamdi Asomugha to a huge deal. They trade for Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. And like you said, it tilted their salary. There wasn't a cap before that, but it tilted their salary proportion way out of control with the cornerback position. They ignored linebacker. You know, other positions got the short end of the stick. So, you know, it happens, and that's going to really affect your roster.
Eric Edholm, great to have you in studio today. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Wayne, thank you very much. And, you know, I'm fascinated by the Matt Flynn scenario in Green Bay because there's one that I've thought about in the past but never really heard until this. And yet now the rumors are everywhere that the Packers, having taken care of one of their two big free agency issues and getting a contract done with Jermichael Finley, could possibly franchise Matt Flynn and then trade him. They know they can't keep him and pay him. They can't afford to do that with their salary cap. But this way they get compensation and they avoid losing him in free agency. Now, here's the problem with that. It seems to be a bit of an abuse of the whole concept of the franchise tag. And this is what I talked about with Wilkie a few minutes ago. I understand that the franchise tag works in the NFL, that it allows players to keep their best player. It's important to the fan base. It creates continuity with the team. But the ability to use that tag 3 years in a row is just this side of slavery, and I don't mean to use the word in the context of what real slavery was, but you know what I mean. It takes away a guy's ability to make the best living that he can. If the Packers have found a way around that system, they're going to let him go, but they're going to get compensation in return. More power to them. I just don't know how the new CBA is going to look at this.
Thanks very much, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.